It was disappointing. It was framed as both a Brexit budget and a budget that would protect, reduce the cost of living for families and focus on children. It didn't deliver there. I mean, there were some small changes in terms of families, which are welcome in terms of the qualified child allowances and the income disregards for lone parents and for the working family payment. But overall, you know, where was the investment needed to really sort of tackle child poverty, even in terms of the childcare investment, while an extra 54 million euro is welcome? Subsidies won't actually produce any more childcare places. You know, that's the reality. Neither do subsidies like the Help to Buy scheme produce any more houses. If you really want to produce more childcare places for families and to make it affordable and also provide a really high quality services, you have to invest in that sector itself. So overall, we felt the budget was disappointing. And when you look at the impact on different groups, what it does show is that those on the lowest incomes will be left behind, Brexit or no Brexit. And by those people, I mean people on the minimum wage and people on social welfare payments. And the reason for this is that inflation is projected to rise by 1.5% in 2020, regardless of what type of Brexit there is, which means prices are going to go up. But people on the minimum wage did not get the increase that the Low Pay Commission recommended, and people on social welfare payments remain at the same rate. So in real terms, the value of their income will fall and they will have to absorb higher prices. So they are falling further behind. If you look at the other end of the spectrum, some salaries are projected to rise 3% next year. So if you want to stop the poverty gap widening, what should have happened in budget 2020 is that social welfare rates should have increased to keep pace with movements and average earnings. We didn't do that, which means if there is a hard Brexit, it's unavoidable really that there will have to be a supplementary budget, because those people I mentioned on social welfare and the minimum wage, how are they going to absorb an extra cost of up to 1300 euros a year while on a fixed income? And these groups spend approximately 20% of their income on food, so they've very little wiggle room as prices increase because they're on the lowest incomes.
Yeah, I mean, you outlined that all in a chart, you know, looking at the percentage of income that people spend on food. And as you say, for people on low incomes or on social welfare, they really are spending a huge chunk of their money on food. And if food were to go up, that's going to be a massive difficulty.
Yes, so they would spend, so the bottom 30% of the population, so would spend between 17 and 20% of their income on food. And obviously the percentage of income falls as the amount of income you have increases. So this is not a surprise, because people on the lowest incomes don't have excess income to save. So the money that they have, generally they have to spend it because it's covering their day-to-day cost of living. So if the cost of food increases, which it inevitably will, regardless of the type of Brexit that we have, but particularly in terms of a hard Brexit, then it's going to be very difficult for these groups to absorb that extra cost. They will have to absorb it, but then something will have to give elsewhere. And the fact of the matter is, the cost of living is rising, not falling. The cost of housing is rising consistently, not falling. There's less access, there's very high waiting lists for health services. The cost of public transport or any form of transport for this group will rise as a result of the increase in the carbon tax. So they're facing increased costs, expected to absorb it. They're on very low incomes, so they're going to fall behind. So, and in fact, the reality is low income groups just don't seem to be on the radar of this government at all. They, you know, in terms of Brexit, low income groups didn't get a look in. We have an announcement of 1.2 billion euros for business, you know, which is welcome to support businesses if there is a no deal Brexit. But where is the investment in people if there's a no deal Brexit? There was no announcement there. There was an announcement that there is going to be a 45 million euro fund, because for the projected job losses in certain sectors. But if they can already project the job losses, why don't they invest in those sectors now so that people can either maintain those jobs or move to other jobs rather than waiting for them to become reliant on the social welfare system? So in terms of even the preparing for Brexit, the priorities are all skewed in the wrong direction. So the challenge that we would point out to government is that, yes, they had challenging decisions to make, but at the end of the day, they didn't actually make the tough decisions. And the decisions they did make means that, you know, poorer people, older people on a state pension, children who are living in poverty, I mean, their situation really isn't going to increase. And, you know, it will be an inevitable increase in poverty in the years ahead if we don't do something to address people on low incomes.
I mean, you also mentioned the carbon tax, you know, as something that was going to increase prices for people. But I mean, people have been calling for carbon taxes for a while. So, you know, is there any positive side to that?
Yes, and we actually advocated an increase of 10 euros in the carbon tax rather than 6. So while we welcome the increase and the pathway to 2030, I do feel that the increase should have been 10 euro, because this would have generated nearly 220 million euros then for government to invest in things, not just an increase in the fuel allowance, which, you know, is welcome, but a lot of people who are going to be impacted on this aren't entitled to the fuel allowance, and they also are on low incomes, to invest in things like retrofitting, you know, in community energy schemes, in making a real difference to people's lives. So why we welcome the ring fencing, especially because it's very unusual for the Department of Finance to allow this income to be ring fenced, we're very disappointed not to see any other sort of environmental initiatives in the budget, because in the long term, the whole purpose of a carbon tax is to change behaviour. So if people do change the behaviours, then the revenue will fall. So you're not going to have the money you need to, you know, meet our targets, change our public transport fleet, retrofit our houses. What we would have liked to have seen is a very large investment in a national retrofitting programme done at scale, where people don't have to put the money in upfront, where it's a programme done at scale, depending on your income. You wouldn't have to put the money up front, because a lot of low-income households can't afford to do that. And then the state would claw that back through the energy bills. This has been rolled out in the Netherlands. It's being rolled out in the UK, and it's working really well because you can do clusters of homes at once. You do areas at once. So it's a much more speedy process. We advocated for a commercial air transport tax, because, you know, airlines are essentially getting a free pass when it comes to this, and that's completely ignored. And they're, you know, airline fuel isn't subject to the jet kerosene tax. So this is one way that you could ensure that the airline sector would make a small contribution, because they are the sector that's increasing emissions at an incredibly fast rate. I mean, a lot of the focus is on agriculture, and rightly so, but we can't let another sector have a completely free pass and then focus only on the individual. So in those terms, it was disappointing, because we can borrow at incredibly low rates. So even if government didn't want to implement some of the taxation measures we proposed, you can borrow at incredibly low rates at the moment. Government should be out there borrowing to invest in our public transport infrastructure, roll it out nationally, make sure our transport fleet is compliant with our emissions targets, and to roll out a mass retrofitting programme, and to invest in the national grid so we can support renewable energy. At the moment, the national grid can't support individuals and communities plugging back into the grid. It needs an upgrade. So all of these things were missing, and yet, regardless of what happens at the end of October, all of these challenges will remain next year and the year after. I mean, by going to borrow this money, they could really frame it as also preparing for Brexit, because that investment is labour intensive in the first five, at least the first 5 or 10 years. It's incredibly labour intensive to do all of that. So not only would they be creating jobs, and not just jobs in Dublin, they'd be jobs all around the country, and in those areas that are going to be impacted regardless of what happens in October. They'd be creating jobs, people would have warmer homes, lower fuel bills, there'd be less cars on the road because people would have access to public transport. I mean, that would have been a real win. Didn't happen, and we don't really see any vision from the government when it comes to the environment, really.